I'm an alcoholic. My name's Brandon. Page 19, it says that we feel an elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. So there's these four chapters, the lost chapters, as Tarek and I like to call them, that nobody, I'm not going to say nobody, that a lot of people don't spend any time with. In fact, I've been in big book studies where group conscience is voted to not read the last four chapters because they don't think they're applicable. This saddens me because a much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes. Well, chapter 8 is two wives. That's in my house. Chapter 9 is the family afterwards. That's my house. Occupations, well, that's two employers. And my affairs, that's a vision for you. See, there's a part in how it works that we read in a lot of meetings that says, the point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Too often in meetings I will hear somebody say, go on talking about how, you know, they got in a fight with their boss, they punched somebody in the face, they waved a gun at somebody in traffic. But hey, it's progress, not perfection. That is usually the mentality that people take, that elimination of their drinking is enough. But if I'm acting in a spiritual way, I'm not fighting with my boss, I'm not punching somebody out, and I'm not waving a gun in traffic. So I have to have this guideline to take me through, how am I supposed to show up in these places? And that's what these chapters are for me towards the end. I use these last chapters as sponsorship tools. On the first day, we went through two wives, and we went through the four types of alcoholics. It goes on to expand on that to talk about how those four types of alcoholics can get well. I read a guy that is struggling in a relationship, I will generally start off with the chapter Two Wives. And I will read to him and I will ask him, has your wife experienced any of these emotions? Has your wife gone through the ringer like the alcoholics have sent their wives through the ringer in this chapter? Without fail, every single guy I take through that chapter that's struggling with his wife starts to realize, oh, I never looked at it from her perspective. I never realized all these things that I do and how it affects her. I never realized all the times that she protected me from my employers and my kids, trying to just hope that one day, somehow, some way, I would just get better. And so I think it's incredible to go through that. Tarek's going to touch on several of the paragraphs throughout here, but the family afterwards, it talks about, it explains precisely what's going to happen when I come home and try to get and stay sober. And these emotions I'm going to go through, this spiritual elation I may pick up to where I want the entire world to find God all at the same time, and how you guys are a bunch of idiots the way that you've done it, and you got to come try this way, and come on, amen, and woo, you know, and everybody looks at you and goes, dude, my God's just fine, leave me alone. These people that have been going to church for years, that I'm trying to tell them that their God's wrong because I've had some sort of spiritual conversion experience. It identifies that in the family afterward. It tells me what I'm going to go through. It also tells the family, let Dad just do what he's going to do, because anything's better than the way that he was. And with time, he will see that he's neglecting you and he'll come back to the family. I too often hear people, you know, they come in and they say, I was told to do 90 meetings in 90 days, but my plan is to do 180 meetings in 90 days. And I'll ask them, well, when you were a drinker, were you a bar drinker? Yeah. So you were gone from the family basically every evening, all night, right? Yeah. What are you doing now? You got sober, nothing's changed. You continue to perpetuate the harm to the family because you've done nothing different. You're not drinking, but you're still harming the family. This chapter outlines that. This chapter talks about what you're going to go through and how we have to experience this thing in our life called balance. My wife and I have an understanding of these are the nights I'm going to meetings. I will not go to meetings on other nights because I'm going to spend time with the family. It's understood. She has Trump. She has the ability to ask me, will you please not go to a meeting tonight? Because I need your help in something. We've been together for 4 years. She's asked me maybe 5 times. And I think four of those I said yes, and one of them I said, honey, I can't do that tonight. I have to go. And she was okay. So for me, the practice of these principles at home makes me have, guys, I wish that you could come spend time with my family and see how my relationship is with my wife, because it is stupid fairy tale good. I mean, it is like, it is beyond the best relationship I could have ever wanted. It is so far beyond that. And God made that possible by, she was kind of friendly with the woman that I was married to. And when we got into the relationship, and I realized shortly there after starting to date her that I really wanted to continue a relationship with this woman. And I realized that she could go to the mother of my children and find out who I really was. So I was effectively forced to give her my fourth step, do a fifth step with her, and tell her all the crazy ass shit I've done in my entire life. And she stayed. But God forces me into these positions because up until that point, I had never been completely honest with a woman in my entire life. This chapter helps show me the way, the vision of how to do that. The chapter to the employers. I hear a lot of people say, I'm not an employer, I don't have to read that. This is working with others, part two. This chapter outlines another way to look at sponsorship. It talks about how to not be codependent. It talks about how to have a relationship where you're not giving constantly to the person that continually abuses you. Because that's what a lot of the guys I sponsor look for in the beginning. Is I sit down with them, I explain to them, I have 4 kids. I have a wife. I sponsor, you know, X number of guys. I am absolutely interested in sitting down with you and spending time with you and helping you find a power greater than yourself. But you start missing appointments. You start not showing up. I'm going to replace you with somebody else. Because I can't allow you to dictate to the rest of the world how it's supposed to be. This chapter identifies that. This chapter also shows you how the rest of the world really looks at alcoholics and how they think that we're just lacking character, weak-willed. They talk about that in this chapter. They go through that in this chapter. They identify that. They really get into it. They really hammer home. If you are sure your man does not want to stop, he may as well be discharged, the sooner the better. You are not doing him a favor by keeping him on. Firing such an individual may prove a blessing. That's talking about the employer keeping on an alcoholic. That's talking about the guy that you sponsor that really doesn't want to stop. Quit wasting your time. By dragging him along, you might be killing him. There are so many things in these chapters that unfortunately they're at the end of the book, and as is the case this morning, I would love to dive in and dissect them, but because they're at the end, they just get squeezed. So it seems like they're not important. These are the guide, these are the roadmap for how to have a happy and successful life in all of your affairs. They tell you that. And then a vision for you. Are you going to hit the last one?
Mm-hmm, you go. I already did earlier than
I know. A vision for you. Tarek's going to hit on at least one paragraph. Or no, that was in family afterward. But
and that's all you.
So it talks about the history of the fellowship and how the very practical approach to his problems, the absence of intolerance of any kind, the informality, the genuine democracy, the uncanny understanding which these people had is irresistible. He and his wife would leave elated by the thought that they could now do for some stricken acquaintance and his family. They knew they had a host of friends, and it seemed they had known these strangers always. They had seen miracles, and one was coming to them. They had visioned the great reality, their loving and all-powerful Creator. It talks about and it dives into when you really get into the fellowship and not just get into the fellowship hanging out in the meetings. I'm talking about the fellowship outside the fellowship. And it just tells you what that's going to be like so that when you know when you're in it, you know when you're in it. It gives you all these guides and understandings. Now, who was on fire watch last night? And you guys volunteered to do that, is that correct? I appreciate you guys doing that because it was tough for me this morning to get up and come in here, and I got a full night's sleep. And it means so much to me that you guys have been as attentive as you have to look up and actually see eyes. I mean, there's plenty of guys in here, and I've seen their names on their books. I know who they are. That just they have found a spot on a wall, and they have stared at that spot, and it is the most amazing meditation I've seen for three straight days. Because they have been so focused on this one spot on the wall, and it's just like, damn, that dude can meditate like a motherfucker. Because he's just not here. But that's okay. He's where he's supposed to be. But you guys that are looking, you guys that are paying attention, you guys that are asking questions, this is awesome. Because not everybody in this room is going to survive. We're not. Some of you are going to be drunk the minute you leave here. You're not going to think you are, but you are. You're going to get taken back to it. But some of you guys, I believe, are going to make it. And I feel good about a lot of you. I don't know which ones of you are going to get out of here and actually go and live a full, contented life, but I feel like there's a bunch of you here. Because your spirit has engaged my spirit. You have allowed me to connect with you at a level that I just is awesome. I wish people would engage like this all the time. They don't. The reality is the disease wins more than it doesn't. And that people don't make it, and people die, and people wreck their lives, and people wreck the lives of others. That's what happens here. Hopefully we've gotten you excited about the fellowship. Hopefully we've got you excited about the steps. Hopefully we've got you excited about the possibilities of where you can take your relationship with others and in turn with God. Hopefully we've done that. But you've got a choice when you leave here. You can either try to cultivate that, or you can just let it go. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that they mean to do something with it right now. They're motivated right now because they want to be different. but they will leave, and something else will just take over. And so, dive in, guys. Your mind will produce with the same effort the most magical experience that you could ever have, or the most miserable. Whatever you plant in your mind will grow and grow and grow. Plant positive experience. Positive experience will come out of you like nobody's business. Focus on the negative. It will take you there. That's what will happen. I've seen it too much. I'm going to close with a little reading out of the 12 and 12, and then Tarek's going to talk for a little bit, and then we're going to open it up for questions. But I thank you guys for letting us be a part of this. Page 124 of the 12 and 12. It's one of these paragraphs that I've never read it before when it was pointed out to me, but yet every single line in this sentence, in this paragraph, is underlined. So I know I've read it, but I never absorbed it. And I've read this before in meetings, and people have been like, "Where's that in the book?" But this to me describes an experience. So again, it's out of the 12 and 12, so you guys can't read along with me, but it says, "Still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home or in the world outside we are partners in a common effort. The well understood fact that in God's sight all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we need no longer be square pegs and round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could ever substitute. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God."
Page 124.
That's not weird.
Mm-hmm.
That's not weird.
This family afterward, I was scanning through it here this morning, and oh God, there's so much in it. And like Brandon, I'm saddened that people don't emphasize these chapters. I mean, literally, there's so much you can work with here and put into practical application. It says, "Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is the thing of supreme value in life. That is true only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. The alcoholic and addict's past thus becomes the principal asset of the family, and frequently it is almost the only one. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life so seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. Early recovery, I would sit in meetings and hear someone introduce himself as a recovered, grateful alcoholic or grateful recovered addict. And I would say to myself, what are they grateful for? I had a lot of fun and now I gotta learn this new way of life and I really don't want to. I just want to get back to where I was. And that completely started to change for me after surrender. That experience only happened in those first 3 years of going to meetings. Once I began to work the steps and I got bit by the magic bug. Here, you get bit by the magic bug when you start sponsoring people. And the first time you witness someone change right in front of you, and you have just been a part of the regenerative power of God. Regeneration, that's what it's talking here. It's talking about that from the very beginning. And in the doctor's opinion, it says, if our ideals are grounded in a power greater than ourselves, we can recreate our lives with God. We co-create. And Brandon's been alluding to it all weekend. Thoughts, words, actions, three levels of creation. It means we create. We are creation machines as well, and we are hooked up to the big one. So can we be conscious of both machines? And that's what this is about here. How do we do that? As being addicts and alcoholics, because that's the path we've been given, we have to learn how to use our past as an asset. That's how we build identification. We each have touched several of you here this weekend because we've had life experiences that got you thinking about your life experiences, and they were both rooted, or they were all rooted in alcohol and addiction, but then you had the life experiences that a lot of people go through that don't have drugs and alcohol. And so we have multiple layers of identification. And hopefully one of the things we've done this weekend is by sharing our past with you and our current experiences, we're all peeling back a layer of the onion. Because the longer you stay on this path, you will stand at turning points throughout your path where you're going to have to peel another layer of the onion, or you will not stay. You have to peel the onion. And part of that is getting to a place where you can bring your past into the present, not with relevance as if it's going to tell you how you're a victim, but you use the past to tell someone it's going to be okay. This is what I went through, and this is the process and system that I use to overcome it, and this is how I stay conscious of God. And so we now are able to touch people with a part of our lives that we wanted to hide and regretted. That sounds like a spiritual experience. Do me a favor and turn to page 128. Bottom of page 128. He is not so unbalanced as they might think. So they're talking about the father and the family. Many of us have experienced dad's elation. We have indulged in spiritual intoxication. So the father has just been bit by the bug. Like a gaunt prospector, belt drawn in over the last ounce of food, the father's pick struck gold. Joy at release from a lifetime of frustration knew no bounds. Father feels like he struck something better than gold. For a time he may try. Here's the key words. For a time he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless load, which will pay dividends if he minds it for the rest of his life and insist on giving away the entire product. That is a description of what we do here. Brandon and I, we are miners. And we want to dig. And we dig deep. Because we've tapped a limitless load. And our job here is everything we find, we got to give it away. It doesn't work out in the real world, but it works in here. If the family cooperates, dad will soon see he is suffering from a distortion of value. So what they're saying here is every one of us, when we get bit by the bug, we're gonna start ignoring the family. Because we got bit by the bug, and it's just as effective as when alcohol and drugs were working. It starts to move us, but it's even greater, way greater than what alcohol, the effect produced by drugs and alcohol, and we begin to put a lot of energy into it. But here's the deal: the father will perceive that his spiritual growth is lopsided. So at some point, you know, I told a family about a year ago that, look, he may seem like he's ignoring you for the next, you know, several months, but at some point he's got to circle back and realize his recovery must include his family. So spiritual growth is lopsided for an average man like himself. A spiritual life which does not include the family obligations may not be so perfect after all. If the family will appreciate that dad's current behavior is but a phase of his development, phase is temporary, all will be well. In the midst of an understanding and sympathetic family, these vagaries of dad's spiritual infancy will quickly disappear. But what I want to see is you get bit by the bug. To put yourself in a position where you're having this issue with your family. That's what we're striving for here. That's the hope and growth and evolution of what we do here. That the walking of the spiritual path, the use of your past in order to touch another guy. Recovery on all levels, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, relationship, all of it can recover. Page 130. One of my favorite paragraphs in the book. Those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childishness of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. This is probably the fourth time in the book we've run across this word, consciousness of the power of God. We have come to believe that God would like us to keep our heads in the clouds with Him, but that our feet ought to be firmly planted on earth. That is where our fellow travelers are, and that is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us. We found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. So everything you need to keep your head in the clouds is available to you in this program of action. Prayer, meditation, amazing books to work with, people to go talk to that have been living a spiritual life through their specific tradition for decades. Go pick their brains. There's so much available to you. People, men and women in the program that have been doing this work for over 30 years. Sit down with them. Talk to them. It's all available to you. You can do so much to experience what they're describing with the head in the clouds. Nearness of the Creator. I don't know if you really have to go anywhere. Actually, I know you don't. But then how do we keep our feet firmly planted on the ground? 12-step work. Sit down. One-on-one. For some of us, it's on the firing lines. I did a lot of work at the Salvation Army for 3 years. I those 3 years were good for me. I worked with some men down there. I took them through the steps. I did a big book study every Saturday night. Off and on for 3 years I was down there, and I got to a point where it was my time was on the firing lines was done. I used to take meetings to treatment centers. I used to do a meeting at a treatment center every Monday night. That's the firing line. It was time for me to move on. But I encourage the guys I sponsor to spend some time on the firing line. I don't think you could spend your entire recovery on the firing line. I couldn't. So my purpose continues to evolve. It's always going to be to help end suffering. That's what I want to do for the addict and alcoholic. I have a role to play in helping end suffering. It just changes from time to time. It may go back to the firing line. I don't know. But what I do know, I found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. And I hope you find it too. It's available to each and every one of you. Do you know where you are on your journey? God's movement has been compared to the flow of rivers. His vastness has been compared to that of the oceans. Some people are content to float here and there with the tide, but for others, such passivity is impossible. We have to navigate. Like early explorers on the high seas, we know where we want to go. That's when studying precedents is important. the wisdom of those who went before us is our map. The truths regarding God are like the stars. We determine our goals. We set out according to what we know and what we learn. The future is always uncertain. That is why it is important to objectively evaluate where we are on our spiritual path. If you are confronted with a pivotal decision and cannot think of any other way to act, write down all the good things and all the bad things about a given situation. Also include how much more you want to do. See if staying your course will give you what you want. If not, change your course, no matter how deeply that will disrupt your routines. Some people never know where they are in life, and that is one of the biggest reasons that they are unhappy. So we greatly appreciate the opportunity you've given us this weekend to carry the message out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your questions. And we hope we meet some of you as we all trudge the road of happy destiny. Thank you. No, we left aside 30 minutes for questions.
Josh.
I'm Steve.
TJ, I'm at it.
Hey, TJ.
I just want to thank both of y'all. This is my first program ever I've ever been in or ever affiliated with AA or NA. I had a good friend of mine that went through here. I saw how good he looked, and we was both currently using together before he came to this program. And I've tried to quit several times on my own. I got a lot of character defects I need to work on. And I just want to appreciate everything that y'all did, because I've never went through a big book study. And I've learned more this weekend about this book, this program, than I've ever had. I appreciate it. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
I'm Steve. I'm an alcoholic.
What's up, Steve?
I've been in and out of the program about 8 years. I've never worked the steps. I like a lot of the stuff that y'all said about, keep coming back, one day at a time, but you're talking about that grace period, when I'd come in, I'd stay sober for a little while, and I never had, they said, you got a choice, and I feel like, the way y'all explained it, I never had a choice. I stay sober for a little while, bam, back out. I've been doing that for years. I learned a lot this weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Ben, I'm out of
control. Hey, Ben.
I have a question about CA. Why do you think it's separate from NA when they use the big book for their text instead of the Narcotics Anonymous? Is it because I just want to hear your take on why you think CA is separate from NA?
Okay. Cocaine Anonymous started in 83. In Los Angeles, California, I believe. Actually, I know. There was a lady, I believe, her name was Miss Millie. I couldn't remember her name the other night. She was an alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she had a lot of, she was friends with these men that were in Alcoholics Anonymous. They were big book thumpers, and they were talking about drugs, cocaine in specific, in the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And some of the old timers had a problem with it. And I can't remember if it was through her suggestion or it was another guy that suggested it, and then she helped them. And because they were already in AA and they were already students of the Big Book, they just went and started Cocaine Anonymous and took the Big Book with them. At some point when they were putting their traditions together, instead of being a singleness of purpose fellowship where it says the third tradition is, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using cocaine, they said the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind-altering substance. So Cocaine Anonymous is not drug-specific. It welcomes anyone suffering from a chronic dependence on any mind-altering substance. So in our home groups, we got alcoholics, we got heroin addicts, we got a couple of meth addicts, and they don't even do cocaine. They don't have a lot of experience with cocaine. And so the name Cocaine Anonymous is very misleading. It's all encompassing, and it uses the Big Book. Now, when the NA started, which I believe was in the 1960s, those guys had some help from Bill Wilson, I believe, in writing their textbook, if I recall correctly, and they just wanted to start something totally different that didn't involve the AA Big Book. In terms of my experience, I love that book. I think that book, I mean, I know it was written, it was divinely inspired and written. God used those 100 people to write that book. And to me, it's just an amazing piece of literature, and it's changed my life. And so there was no way in hell I was going to NA. I was going to go find me a fellowship that used the Big Book, and I could talk freely about my experience, because I am alcoholic, but it didn't bring me to my knees. I was brought to my knees by cocaine. And what I've watched was a lot of people in AA who have very little experience drinking. So we got together, 14 of us, when we started our home group, and we said, you know what, let's dig all these people out of AA. They don't have any business being in AA. Right? And so that's what we've done over the years. So, does that answer your question?
And I personally have a belief system around the Big Book. I've never looked at the NA book. I don't know anything about it. But the 12-step fellowships originated from Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I've hopefully conveyed to you my belief over the course of this weekend, that there's a short form of the traditions and there's a long form. There's a short form of steps and there's a long form. So even if I take those steps and I apply it to gambling or I apply it to overeating, if I'm not applying it with the long form that's contained within the first 164 pages of this book, I'm missing something. And so for me, this is the basis of any 12-step fellowship ever, period. It was the first one. And so there's, how many are there now? There's like 200 or 300 of them, that different fellowships that use the short form of the 12 steps. But there's only two that I'm aware of that use the long form of the short steps, which is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. So that's my belief around this book and why I think this book is that important.
His answer was much better.
I just want to be able to
check on. Yeah. Yes, sir. Oh, wait. No, you were next. Okay. He was next, then back there, then here. Wait, I just saw in hand. Who's here? You? So one, two in the back, then three. Okay?
My name's Mike. I'm an addict.
Hey, Mike.
I appreciate you guys. I got a lot out of this. It might not look like I did last night, but I do apologize.
No, you're good, brother.
But I do thank you, both of you. I really do. I'm an old man, and I've been doing drugs all my life. This is the only thing I haven't tried yet. This might be the only thing that works. I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Paul.
Hey, Paul.
I'm wondering, you know, when you want to practice this, you know, helping others, and I see a lot of people that, you know, when they're out there, they try to get too eager and try to rush into it. I'm wondering, I talked to you guys about meditation last night. I'm wondering if that should be the focal point to start your day, as far as when you're trying to adopt this spiritual path. And is that what you guys do instead of just trying to rush out and, you know, try to gather everything in at once? You know what I mean? It has to be a pace to it, I'm sure. You know, like, I'm just wondering if there, you know, some people try to just get out there and go too quickly.
Try to golf
everything at once and really stumble along the way and really
don't
absorb anger. That's all
it's like. I believe that God's involved in all this stuff, and that those people that go out there and that they hurry and they appear like they're going too hard, there's a purpose in that. It may get them excited about actually realizing that they can do something here. I sit down with the guys that I sponsor in the beginning, and I outline steps 10, 11, right from the gate. I talk about the principles. Now, they don't understand fully what it is until we get to steps 10 and 11, but I outlined the purpose of meditation, because if I'm out there running around thinking I'm doing God's will, but I'm not meditating, I'm probably not, because I don't have any, I'm not receiving any information because my head's too, I drive around in my car mostly in silence nowadays. And if I have the radio on, it might be because I'm kind of getting tired and I need something going on. I'm usually listening to sports talk or something like that. Or I'm listening to a book on tape, or I'm listening to a speaker disc. Otherwise, I'm in silence. Because for me, noise today is too much. Now, before, I couldn't get in the car without, you know, changing the channels and switching discs and talking on the phone and doing everything else, because my mind was so crazy that I had to have all this noise. So, yes, meditation to me is something that from day one I try to get the guys that I'm sponsoring to dive in and do it. But some of the greatest lessons I've learned in my life have been from getting out there and doing something before I was supposed to do it, so that I failed, so that I knew that I needed to get some more practice on some other areas before I actually did it. So, do you?
No, I think that's perfect. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. No, that's great. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm Fred. I'm Eddie.
Hey, Fred.
It's very obvious y'all have a very strong relationship with God. My question is, does or where does the Bible come in with y'all in my spiritual walk?
For me, I belong to a group of men that we meet every 2 weeks, and we compare notes about our spiritual paths, and we pull in for all religions. And so from time to time, the passages may come to us from that religious text. But I consider myself a Buddhist, a Christian, a Muslim. I consider myself all of them. Some people will probably say to me, "You're confused." But I'm not confused, because I, for me, understand that that I'm riding donkey all the time. I may hop from donkey to donkey because of the period of time in my life, because I'm attracted to something on that donkey. But I've long left the idea that there's only one path to whatever God is. That doesn't exist for me. And so the answer to your question, from time to time, it plays a little role, just like every other religious text. I'm more into the mystical branch of Christianity. So I'm big into this, you know. From time to time, I read a lot of, he's a monk from Yosemite named Thomas Merton. And that's the aspect of Christianity that I love. I love the Tao. I love the Buddhists. I love the Sufis. I just love it all. It doesn't matter. Like, when I get this concept of God, there is no image of God anymore. It's just a word. That's it. Just a word. Any ideas that I put on it are limiting. So I try really hard not to put any ideas on it. All I know is that there is a God. That's all I need to know for me. It keeps me very free, and it doesn't involve any type of rigidity. And I'm able to. You can share your experience with me, and that's great. And I'm going to listen, and I'm not going to have to prove anything. That's true freedom. If what you're doing and what tradition you're in and what religion you follow produces positivity in your life and it allows you to live freely and be of service, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. That's all that matters to me. Brandon's got his own take on this question. This is a good question.
Well, for me, Christianity and the Bible, when I first got sober, I had deep-seated resentment against the religion as a whole. Okay, so I was so resistant to it. I'll tell you, people would bring up, you know, Christ in the meeting, and I could feel the just tenseness coming over me. So I was very resistant to it. But then what's happened? It's the weirdest thing, because I think that it doesn't matter what religion people follow, what dogma they follow, because that's all it is a dogma, I believe. is its teachings from a person or a group of people. Christianity is the teachings of one man that are captured in a book, and the man, I believe, had a direct link to God. I also believe that we all have a direct link to God, and we just have to cultivate it. I think that for the longest time in my early recovery and my whole life, I misunderstood the text. I didn't know what it meant. I read the words literally, and I said that that can't be what it is. But through exploring some of these other religions and through exploring other texts, what I have found is that those other texts allow me to understand biblical text at a deeper level. And I remember I was listening to a guy named Anthony DeMello, who was a priest that was kind of mystical. He was out there a little bit. And he told the story multiple times. It was the same story. I had to listen to it three times before I understood it. But it was like the magic decoder ring for Scripture. Like, when I finally understood the story he was telling me, it's like, oh. And I started applying that magic decoder ring to every Scripture that I read out of the Bible, and I understood it. And I understood it not just like, oh, that's what they mean. Like, I could understand it. I could feel it. I could get down with it. And I, one of my favorite books that I read in I don't know if it was early sobriety, but it's probably a couple years ago, is a book by a guy named Emmett Fox called Sermon on the Mount. And it goes down and it takes the Beatitudes and the Lord's Prayer and it breaks it down and studies it. And you read it and you're just like, holy crap, people have no idea what this stuff means. I mean, like, in Our Father, our daily bread, what does that mean? I always thought it meant like food, right? It's sustenance. It's everything that was ever, that drives us. It's our relationships. It's our food. It's our water. It's our air. It's our relationship with God. It's everything. And if I just look at it as bread, I miss the point. So I can go into Scripture now and understand the teachings at so much greater of a level as a result of exploring other religions. So do I apply what's in that book in my life? Absolutely. That's not the only place I go. Because if that's the only place I go, if that's the only place I went when I got here, I still wouldn't understand it. But because I'm willing to go to other places, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a self-help guy. I don't care if you're a Christian. I don't care if you're Buddhist, Muslim, Taoist. If you've got some information that can improve my relationship with God, game on. Bring it on. Let's go find it. Let's go find that endless load of whatever it is and keep mining. Let's go. So I've had conversations with a lot of people and they get really whacked out with how I approach the fact that I can point to some scriptures and read it to them and explain to them what it means to me, and they look at it and they're like, I've been studying this book my entire life and I'm a Christian. You say you're not a Christian. How can you do that? Because I believe in God. That's how. So, I don't know if that fully answers it. But
thank you.
Yes, sir. Well, this is kind of a question like opinion and beliefs. Everybody's got different points of life. What are y'all beliefs on that? Like,
how much time you got?
Yeah, I know.
I'll. It changes. Okay. It changes, but only in one way. What happens out there? We don't just go. We're not just here and we stop. That's my belief. We're not just born from nothing and then we die and go to nothing. We come from somewhere and we return to somewhere. Look at the seasons. They repeat. Look at the cycle of the flower. Flower, seed. Seed turns to sapling. Sapling turns to tree. Tree turns to flower. Flower falls. Seed. Everything in life returns. Continues. What I can't figure out is what goes on in that mist out there. and that thing that's out beyond whatever this is. Because maybe that mist is really right now. Maybe what's going on out there is really happening now. We can go so deep into this thing, but it is not my belief that we're here to do this once. It is my belief that we come here, we pass, we fail. If we get a 99%, we fail. Do it again. We pass, we fail. We fail, 99%, do it again. I pick up experience through that, and then I get a pass next time. If I look at anything in my life, I get the same teaching. Again and again. I tried to get sober, couldn't. Tried to get sober, couldn't. Tried to get sober, couldn't. Sober. If I continue to do the same practice, I stay sober. It's a cycle until you break the cycle, and then it expands. Everything expands. Everything recreates. Everything goes on again. So, not a straight answer, but I don't have time to really talk about this.
I'll call you when you're out.
All right.
Terry.
Yeah, we've got time probably for, you got a question?
I do.
Okay, so we got one here.
Yep.
We got you, and then I saw a hand over here, right here. That's it. That's probably all we're going to have time for. We'll see if we have a fourth, but one, two, three, because you had your hand up for a while. Go ahead.
I'm going to have Hotline J. Yeah. This is just a quick question for Terry. Last night you talked about, I think it was from Benjamin Ford, watch. And you mentioned two other things after that, but I didn't get a chance to catch them. I was ranked.
Okay.
Can you expand on that?
Yeah. So a lot of people think of the 10th step, and they think of what's up there. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. That barely scratches the surface. The 10th step says we've entered the world of the Spirit, and now our function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. It says this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for the rest of our lives. The first thing it asks us to do is watch. Watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these things crop up, and they will, at once, we ask God to remove them. So that's the second spiritual practice. So as I'm going through my day, I'm paying attention to what's going on in here. What's going on up here. I get real fearful. God, please remove my fear. Direct my attention to what you have me do. I just ask God to remove it. You know, I'm engaging with my wife, and she's doing some things I don't agree on. She's about to spend a bunch of money I don't want her to spend. I'm about to get real selfish, and I'm about to get real fearful, and I'm about to get angry. If I'm awake, I say a prayer. And sometimes the only prayer is, God, help me. Right? And that's asking. So I got watch, I got ask, and then there are these opportunities for me to turn my thoughts. Turn my thoughts. Right. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And so that's a spiritual practice where I'm in the middle of this experience with my wife, and maybe I turn my thoughts to her and my daughter, and I'm the provider, and I am here to take care of them. God has loaned me these two beautiful manifestations of Him to take care of. And that's, I've just turned my thoughts. Can that come into my thought life? And over the years, I've practiced it to where, yeah, that happens. That shows up. If this stuff continues, and my wife walks away from our budget meeting, and the fear is on me, and I am angry that she's about to spend $300 to get her hair done, and it stays on me. And so what I do is, the big book says I must discuss with someone immediately. And so then I call him. Brandon, this is what's going on. You know, Brandon asked some questions. Did you harm her? Well, I shut down and quit talking to her. I guess I withheld my love and I punished her. You probably owe her an amends. Thanks. Click. And so I go to my wife and I make the amends. I make the apology, because at that point it's more of an apology. Hey, I'm sorry I shut down on you. And then I attempt to practice a code of love and tolerance. That is an active tenth step, is what I just described to you. So it's watch, ask, turn, practice the code of love and tolerance, cease fighting, a vision of God's will into all your activities, safe and protected, and know that you are in that position, that you are safe and protected. Those are 10-step practices, in my opinion. I do those all day long. It's the hardest step to practice. Mr. Bill, did I answer your question? Okay.
We were talking yesterday about kind of the idea of qualifying someone or qualifying ourselves. Are you one of us? Am I the real one? And if so, what am I? Okay, now that Carolina, I think there's a big number here, and say this group in and of itself. They're going to go back to rural areas. They may not have an option of even an AA or an NA, let alone a CA. Give you some thoughts on giving someone the confidence that it's okay too. Look, you're in an area, a county, a town, and what they have is one meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe give some thoughts around some of these guys who will be leaving in the next couple of months. And is that okay?
Yeah.
You know, you give them permission.
Yeah, we're both going to chime in on this one. Go ahead.
There's loopholes everywhere if you look for them. Short form, third tradition says that the only requirement is that I have a desire to stop drinking. Come on. You can come to the meeting. It is my belief that if you go to AA you can talk about the selfishness, self-centeredness. You can talk about the what happens within you. But the minute that you start talking about putting needles in your arms and all that stuff, that's when you violate a tradition. That's when you're starting to talk about stuff that's outside what's acceptable within the rooms of AA. But make it clear. I have a desire to stop. You can introduce yourself. I have a desire to stop drinking. I'm an addict. You can go then. And what the crazy thing that'll happen is you start identifying yourself that way is you'll start attracting addicts to you. And who knows? You're in a rural area where meth's a big deal. You might start your own little meeting that deals with that. You can take this wherever you want. There's the stopgap. There's what's necessary now. And then there's where's God going to take you. And if AA meetings are all that there is, make it real clear. You're not going to talk about drugs in the meeting. But I am here because I have a desire to not drink alcohol or do anything else. And to me, that's the loophole that allows you to come in the door. The reason for the tradition is when I was an alcoholic and I showed up in an AA meeting and people were talking about snorting stuff and smoking stuff and everything, I would have been like, these guys aren't like me. My identification would not allow me to stick around in a room like that because I was straight alcoholic. So you have to respect the tradition from that standpoint. But what goes on before the meeting, after the meeting, the discussions that are had, game on, talk about your experience. That's what's up. So
it's very, very important that you know what. On any given night, I go to 3 meetings when I go to a meeting. I go to the meeting before the meeting, I go to the meeting, and I go to the meeting after the meeting. And so in that time period, you can discuss your identification. If you're an addict and you show up at an AA meeting and all you have access to is AA, you can introduce yourself as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to introduce yourself as alcoholic. Because I would not suggest you introduce yourself as an alcoholic if you're not an alcoholic. Why just raise up your hand and tell a lie? Why can't you just say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? I have a desire not to drink. And from that point on, you got to pay attention. What is the topic of discussion if you're in a discussion meeting? Okay. If it's on anything after the first half of the first step, it's game on for you because everybody is the same in that regard. We all suffer from a broken internal condition called unmanageability. And then everything else after that is how do I gain access to the power of God? And so, from time to time, you're going to have to not share at a meeting. But what you need to do is show up early and show up and stay late so you can get to know the other people that are in the same position as you. And then you can start comparing notes with them. Yeah, I'm a crackhead. And then before you know it, there's like 3 or 4 of you,
yeah.
You know, and then you're like, well, let's call up to Atlanta and let's start a CA meeting or let's start a Crystal Meth Anonymous. There's CMA. And CMA also is another one that uses the big book. But it's got to start somewhere. Go find your people. Your people are in the rooms of AA. I promise you they are. And so there is a way for you to be an Alcoholics Anonymous and get well, work the steps and carry the message and find those people that are like you. And before you know it, you got a little band of brothers. So, does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I'm Tyler Maddie.
Hey, Tyler.
You said you don't have any specific religious affiliation. So who was the liar you refer to? Like, who is that to you?
Oh, the liar?
Yeah.
It's the voice of the addict that lives within inside of me. And the liar is the one that tells me my case is a little bit different than yours. The liar is the one that tells me that I need to keep fighting, and then if I surrender, I've lost. For years, the liar told me that. The liar is the one that tells me that I have to be important in every situation that I encounter. You know, the liar is the one that tells me my viewpoints are always correct. That's the voice that lies to me inside. That's who the liar is. Does that answer your question?
It does, but it doesn't, I think. The negative force of the universe is what I felt like you were asking about. And is there some underlying negativity that exists that causes us to do what we do?
Hmm.
That force is me. The other force is me too. There is one entity that rules all. And that entity that rules all doesn't view life as good or bad, good or evil. I have a bunch of chickens. They free range. When I open the coop and they go running out, I don't care what they do. I want them to be safe. I don't want them to get picked off by the fox that comes and bites their heads off and then comes back and picks the one that it wants and takes it away. I don't want that to happen. It does. I don't particularly care the display of the roosters raping the hens. I don't like it. But it happens. I don't like that some of my hens pick the feathers out of the other hens. I don't like it. But it's what they do. And to me, whatever that power is in the universe, that's how it views us. It doesn't view what we do as good or bad. It may have opinions on it, but it doesn't really care. It wants us to go out and live our life. They're going to eat bugs. They're going to eat this. They're going to do that. They're going to do these things. They're going to live until they don't. And that's what happens. There's no force that drives them to do the negative things to each other. It is their nature. It is their programming is what goes on within them. The negative force in the universe is my interpretation of all the programming I've given that makes me decipher good from bad. Mm. Some of the most horrific, terrible things that have ever happened to me have been in my highest good. I don't judge them as negative anymore. I don't particularly care to go through some of them. But I don't think that there's that one dark force in the universe that drives me to do the things that I do. I think that that's a cop-out. I feel like that's me saying that I'm not responsible for what I do. And I'm that negative force. I'm that one that makes that decision to go do these things. Now, on a lot of levels, I don't have choice because of the drugs or the alcohol. But it's still me that's manifesting that through my thoughts. So, it's an interesting question.
Mm. I Brandon and I sort of diverge right now on this a little bit. Because I'm a guy that believes, in my current conception of God, that I'm being lived through this experience of life. That it's called, we call it existence. I'm being moved through the existence. And I don't have the capacity to do any different. That doesn't take away responsibility. I have to repair damage. But my only true responsibility is to have a perspective on how I'm being lived through existence. That's my only responsibility. I don't think I can do any different than what happens. And I'm not using that as an excuse, and I don't have this conversation with a lot of people, but I move through existence, and I need to find fellow travelers like Brandon where we can compare notes about our path. Well, this is what I'm experiencing. What are you experiencing? And then we go back and forth with a dialogue. That's truly it. Everything we discuss is pretty much an illusion. We don't know it to be true, but it works for us. And the human mind wants something to be concrete, wants it to be the truth, wants me to figure it out. The reality of it is I'm never going to figure this out. All I do is compare my notes with other people that have the same desire to seek God. That's what it's about. Find those people that want to seek and then compare notes. That's it.
Where are we on time, Bill? I mean,
we're done.
We'll go as long as you want, but it's up to you.
One more question and then a wrap.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was at a place last night when we were talking about 15, maybe 4 weeks, but you read out that our next function is growth and understanding and effectiveness. You have like a definition or a word that you said that kind of the same thing as understanding.
Yeah.
One for effectiveness. I think you said understanding.
Yes, sir. Yeah, understanding the spirit world and effectiveness in the human world. Human world. That's the way I look at it. No, you're good, brother. Yeah.
Bill, drug addict, alcoholic.
Bill!
Guys, just a couple final thoughts here. Understanding
is
a spiritual thing, and it's if you're disinterested, I imagine this was a long weekend. Good. If you're unsure or unclear, I hope you have clarity or more clarity today. If you're a mad dog that needed waking up, welcome. Welcome. Infiltrate this place while you're here. Out there when you're on path. When you leave here, we need you. Today, we're not going to have a traditional ending meeting at 11 o'clock. We're going to have some free time. What I would encourage you guys to do is to gather and talk and share and in this experience and as you're growing in your recovery through a weekend like this, by all means, let's have little meetings. Don't have to have a formal reading attached with them. I hope we do that all the time. I know you guys do. I hear about it all the time. I watch it. Preacher Bobby is here. I'm going to give him at about, Jack, you say about 11:10, we'll be fully cleared out by 11:15.
Yes,
and as always, that's your optional time with him if you'd like. It will be in this room at 11:15 start time. And other than that, I want the whole Jefferson County to hear the ovation for these guys right now. Come on! Why you're here and what you're doing, and thank you for your message and everything else. Just a pleasure, absolute pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Here, here. Yeah.